Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Each One, Reach One, hosted by the Vouch System. Today we are honored to be joined by Egypt, also known as Devin Robinson X. In less than 3 years, Egypt has appeared on Apollo, BET's 106 in Park, MTV, UPN, NBC, the TED Talk, NPR, 17 Magazine, HIV Plus Magazine, POZ Magazine, New York Daily News, the Madison's Who's Who's of Business Executives and Professionals, in addition to also a BET special, Pose or Not. I could go on and on and on about what Egypt has accomplished in the short time frame, but I'd rather speak to him himself. Welcome, Egypt, to the show. How are you?
Man, brother, I am doing really well. Happy to be on the show.
Thank you, thank you. Well, let me start, because we met back in 2002, I want to say, at FAU, and that's when you had just kind of, you know, began journey in life. What did you kind of see that, you know, that journey would entail at the beginning?
Well, back then, it was more of a figuring out what I wanted to do. I already knew, number one, I wanted to, you know, it's like any other activist. I wanted to change the world. I just didn't know how. I didn't know what was going to be my platform. All I knew was I just wanted to change something. So at that time, I was just trying to figure out things. I was blessed to be in the company of you and Phil Pratt III, and many other activists at the time, and many other just strong, positive people who were doing something. So I didn't want to copy, but I wanted to do something as well. I wanted to make sure my name was known as somebody who stood up and said no. So at that time, I was just trying to figure out, you know, who I was, what I wanted to do, and how I wanted to go about my main mission, which was changing the world.
Right. I mean, you're doing such a great job, fantastic job. I mean, I'm proud of you. And I'm sure you've also affected a lot of people's lives in a positive way. And let's speak a little bit about your life, I guess, growing up. It wasn't a, you know, rosy, you know, picture or easy circumstances. You know, kind of how was it growing up for you, and where did you come from?
Well, my upbringing was a little unique. You know, I tell people when they say Fort Lauderdale, I can actually say, like, for real Fort Lauderdale, like every city in Fort Lauderdale or town in Fort Lauderdale, I grew up in, from Sunrise, Sunland, Pompano, Cold Springs, you know, all that entirety of Fort Lauderdale. I actually grew up in parts of it, Lauderdale, Lauderdale Lakes, doesn't matter. And what happened is that I got a chance to see both sides of the coin. I got a chance to see the wealth of Cold Springs, and I got a chance to see the poverty of Sis Trunk. And what it does is it shapes your mind and your eyes, allows you to realize that, you know what, it's not just a, you know, a hood out there, and only hood people are doing bad things. Some rich people are doing bad things in their neighborhood as well, but they're doing it differently. For instance, the poor people in poverty-stricken areas, they may be smoking weed and selling crack, but the rich people may not be smoking weed. They smoke, of course, they all smoke weed in rich areas, but they do prescription drugs. It's okay. When they have problems, they do drugs. In poverty-stricken area, when they have problems, they pray. You learn these different things, and it shapes your mind to realize that you have to be the perfect balance of both sides of the coin, so that way you don't put yourself at risk of being the negative side of both parts of the coin.
Right. Okay. You've seen both sides of the picture in that early age. How did that impact you as a young, you know, as a youth? You know, what kind of did you get in trouble? You know, and you know, did you face a lot of obstacles and adversity because of how you kind of grew up in that area?
Well, I tell it like this: in the poverty-stricken area, I had to deal with bullying, early, maybe in like elementary school. I got bullied by a girl. Don't tell anybody about that. But so in the poverty stricken area, I had to understand about bullying, being bullied by a girl, and then in addition to understanding how to deal with not having too much all the time. We weren't like poor and stuff of that nature. My mother did what she had to do to make sure that we had what we needed to have. So I wasn't one of these, you know, poor, you know, about to die type of people. We just didn't have all the stuff we needed all the time, but she made do. With that, in the partnership area, what I learned is how to endure, you know, sometimes when we didn't have the lights or sometimes when we had to have the candles and, you know, the different little things and whatnot, you know, I understand how to endure and how to accept what I have. Now, when we moved to Cold Springs after my mother passed, me and my older sister, we moved to Cold Springs. You know, it was a better neighborhood. Now, it was better opportunities there, but you got a chance to see how to deal with having much more and how to deal with those who have so much more and how they lived. And it inspired me to realize that I could do so much more. You know, that's when I started meeting all my mentors. Ansel Pratt, I met him when I was 17. And my other mentors, they taught me things about being first class. But I didn't learn that in the hood. I learned about this when I got into the bigger neighborhoods because I realized that, you know, there's so much of a bigger world out there than just these little four corners of Fort Lauderdale. And I realized that there was so much more opportunity, money, things that exist that I could use, resources I could use in order to branch out and help people. And those are two things I learned. I learned how to endure in the poverty-stricken area. Then I learned how to set my sights on bigger things in the, I guess, well-to-do area.
Okay. Very, very well. I mean, you seem both on, and they both added to who you are today. It sounds like at the age of 12, though, you said you lost your father, and you know, how did you lose?
Well, my mother passed when I was 12, and my dad a day later canceled child support. Within that same week, my dad looked me in my face and told me that he didn't want me, you know, because me and my sister, we went to him. I mean, this is my sister was about 18, 19 at the time. She wanted help. You know, she had her own child in addition to my younger sister and a couple other people that we had to take care of. So she wanted help with taking care of me. And my dad told her that, you know, I need to get a job because he had a job when he was 13, I believe. He said, I need to get a job, like when I was 12. You know, it could have been true, but at the same time, it's very sensitive to tell somebody who's, you know, you just lost your mother. You know, you can still feel the last time you caressed, you hugged, you said I love you to your mother, to tell somebody that, hey, you know, I'm not really, I could care less. You need to get a job. I'm not trying to help you. So I lost him. I lost him in the sense that he may still be alive, breathing, and doing great things. I don't hate him, but at this time, at that time, like I lost him. You know, we lost the battle with child support. We lost the battle with him helping in any capacity. So that's how I actually lost my father. I lost him when he told me that he didn't want me.
Wow. So it's quite an impact for a 12-year-old, I'm sure, to you know, to be thrust in that situation. But you handled it well, and I guess it's testament to also your sister, who handled it well and allowed you to blossom into the young man you are today. And I've seen your one man monologue, you know, that you do. What's the essence behind that?
Well, there's actually three one man shows that I do. There's one called God Me HIV. Which the whole essence behind that is educating people about HIV in a way that you're not going to expect. You know, it's not like, oh, HIV, or it's not really theater-ish where, you know, it's giving people this so high, dramatic, and artsy way of talking about HIV, but it's giving the real reality. When you're watching me, I model myself after reality. When you're watching this, you're there. I want you to feel like you're there. You're there and you're in the midst of whatever I'm talking about. The next is a one-man show called From Property to President, and it's a Black History one-man show that goes from Africa, Sammy Davis Jr., Martin Luther King. It touches so many parts of black history, just to show you how beautiful our black history is, and the whole essence behind that is for you to realize that the only reason we're able to have a black president, despite that we once were property in the same land, is because he knew his history. He knows where he came from. There was a lot of tears and a lot of shoulders that he stood on, and he stands on to this day, that allows him to have the motivation, the spirit, and the power to be who he is. And then the last one is actually a new one. It's called My Wife Hates My Boyfriend. Now, this is going to probably be, God willing, the most controversial, worldly impactful one-man show that I've ever written. And this is actually a prelude to probably my last one-man show for the next 10 years, which would be Yes, God. But that's I haven't written that, but I haven't performed it as of yet. But My Wife Hates My Boyfriend is very controversial, and it's really taken a hold of this whole idea of being part-time gay that we have in this country, where you'll see girls or kiss other girls or have sex with other girls, and then they'll go and think that all of a sudden their husband is going to be okay with it. And then you have these guys that be experimenting with other guys as if it's just cool, you know. Mike is doing this to me, it doesn't matter. But in reality, there's a lot of adverse effects that's going to come after all of this experimenting, quote-unquote, that we're doing, and think that it's just a temporary thing that we're doing with our bodies and our time, not realizing that it's such a long-term effect of the spirits that we're inserting in our bodies with so many confused people or evil people that we're having sex with, and the cheating and the lying that happens when people are not honest about their sexual history or sexual preference. And all the individuals that get affected when they find out that their husband was actually on the down low, or their wife was on the down low as well, because it happens with women as well, and then they get infected with HIV, herpes, all types of STDs, and now they're confused and they're broken. So this is a really dramatic in a sense that you're going through so many emotions watching this show that it just hits people and lets them know that, hey, there's a truth out there. There's a reality out there that we have to pay attention to, because if we don't, we're going to be a victim of not paying attention to it. So that's the essence behind that. And those are the three one-man shows that I do.
Okay. Now, I guess you spoke on a lot of things there. You hit on a lot of things, being relationships, honesty, sex, and so forth. And I guess you've traveled the country, you know, quite a bit, and even been outside of the country to places. But, I mean, how has black love been represented, you know, to you in places that you've seen and in the relationships that you've seen?
Well, in the places I've seen black love on it displayed in so many beautiful ways. Like, I've seen it, of course, in my life with my sister, how I treat my niece. Like, I actually married my niece, not in, like, the, you know, backyard type way, but I saw the movie Courageous, which is an awesome movie. And the black father married his daughter. He gave her a ring and said, hey, only a man that's better than I should be able to take that off your hand and replace it. And you can't give yourself, your time, your body to any of these men unless they're able to meet me and prove that they're worthy of it. And that's a big thing, because a lot of young men don't even want to meet the uncle or the father, because they already know they're not about anything. They're just trying to get into the pants of the daughter or of the son or whoever, in order to, you know, that's their whole main focus is. So that display of black love I have for my niece, my nephew, my oldest sister, my youngest sister, you know, it all gave me an idea of what black love is and what it can be. And then in addition to going outside the country, I went to a place called Doha, Qatar, which is a third richest place on earth in the Middle East, right? Now,
yeah.
I met a young lady there, and her name escapes me at this present moment, but she told me about how much she loves herself. Now, she's an African that lives in England, but now moved to Qatar. When I tell you, she is just as dark as I am. And so there's no, I make the, the point of mentioning her skin complexion, because she's in a place where if she was like fair skinned, she could have been misconstrued as being one of the Middle Easterns. But she was dark skinned. So they knew that she was African, and they knew that she was not one of them, and you could tell her ability to love touched those kids more than anything. That's black love. Black love is this powerful thing that we have in America in the world that we are able to touch people with that most people don't even care about. We're the culture that loves because we've been hated for so long, we've had no other choice but to love. And I always give this example, like a white kid can come to a black church or a black, as a matter of fact, a black party. As long as he can just dance a little bit, we'll say, go white boy, go white boy, go white boy. We'll do it all day long. That is us. That's black love. Because we have this thing, we don't just tolerate you, we love you. We'll say, hey, you want something to eat? You're good. We want you to be welcome. Because that's black love. Now, of course it won't be reversed if a black guy goes to an all-white party and he can dance better than anybody. He probably won't go black boy, be like, leave black boy. But the reality behind it is that the black love that I've seen us put on other people and us do to our families was inspirational. The only thing that I was missing was the black love that we would incite upon each other in the realm of relationship. Intimacy, man and woman and woman, or man and man, what have you, that was missing because I didn't see too much of that, but I saw enough of it to know that existed from watching my mentors who got together when they were in their 30s. They said they got together in their 30s and then there's beautiful love where they got three kids and their kids are just doing so well because their parents are loving each other, so they're able to love them. My best friend, his parents were in love, and that's why when they had them, they taught them how to love. So these people, when you go around them, you feel the love. My other family members, I call them my family as well. They're Puerto Rican, you know. They got that 33% of black in them, so I consider them black too. But I said to them that the love that the mother and the father had, you can see it in the kids. Because I was accepted around them. I was accepted. You know, when I needed a place to stay, food to eat, Devin, come in here. But that's love. So when I saw, from there I wrote a book called How Good Is Sex, which details, hey, you need to have a little bit more than sex or sex appeal to be loved and to get what you truly want from this man or woman. Then after that I wrote another book called Love Is Not an STD, which comes with a workshop as well. But the book is a powerful book that talks about, hey, you know, we got to stop thinking that the only way to get somebody to love us is to open our legs or to open someone else's legs. You know, that has to stop. Because too many people are broken from it. So that's the black love is the inspiration that I got all these things to start. And that's actually where it started from, sitting from my family. My family, my outside family as well, and watching the black relationships intimately-wise that inspired me to believe that black love, the intimate portion, is what I need to work on in my work as an activist.
Okay, right. Well, the switchboard is lighting up. I guess people want to either ask you a question or talk to you. So let's take one of these right now to see what they have to say. Welcome to the show. Hi, caller. Well, we must have lost them there. So, getting back to what we were saying, Devin, you're traveling the world now, and you've recently relocated from South Florida to Atlanta, correct?
Yes, sir. I'm in the beautiful city of Atlanta. I guess I call it beautiful city for the moment. Because it's cold as all outdoors, though, but it's still beautiful.
Right, it's a good place. I like Atlanta. It's diverse. Has a lot to offer. What do you think Atlanta has to offer? You know, what you're trying to do versus South Florida. Why the move?
Well, you know, South Florida, you know, it still has, you know, some things that I haven't done. But for the most part, I felt that Yeah, I wanted my family moved up here, so I wanted to get closer to them because that's my backbone. And two, you know, South Florida has they have my heart, you know. So I've done so many things in South Florida. I didn't want to be one of those people that became I don't want to make it easy for myself because I could put on shows. You've been to one of my shows. I mean, my shows always have 500 people each night, you know, and this is about HIV. So the idea of figuring out how successful I can be in changing the world, I wouldn't be able to detail because I'm getting the love that I, you know, of people that have known me for so long. And, you know, am I really making change if I'm talking to the same people over and over again? You know, I wanted to see, you know, was it just a gimmick? Was it because I was from South Florida and I was so successful? You know, let me try it somewhere else. Coming to Atlanta was a total difference because, of course, I didn't know anybody. I knew a few people here, but I wasn't well-known here. Yeah, I've been on TV a lot, but it wasn't like my name. My face is like that's the guy from TV. Come, let's jump on him. So coming here was just a good opportunity to see, you know, how I can affect change and how I can see, am I as effective in Florida as I am anywhere else in the country, and having a new home, and it showed proof. You know, I came here and I started hitting the ground running, and I mean, I get so much love here. It's about to be filling by the end of this year. It'll be a new South Florida for me.
Right. Well, you know, you seem to be very well respected, or else all these different syndicates wouldn't be inviting you on board, such as like BET and NPR, MTV, UPN, and TED Talk. Well, now, how is TED Talk? Because I actually just started about a year ago listening to some of the TED Talks. So what did you speak on TED Talks?
Actually, believe it or not, my first TED Talk was in Amman, Jordan in December of last year. And going overseas to talk about anything, I mean, I had to, they told me, number one, I couldn't talk about HIV. And I couldn't talk about sex because those things are taboo. I said, cool. But that also kind of added to the fact that I'm going to be talking about something totally outside of what I planned to, but it was okay. So I get there. And what I decided to talk about was inspiration of beating yourself, the inspiration of beating yourself. And that worked so well because everybody can relate. So it didn't matter what color, what language, what ethnicity, you can relate to beating yourself because you are your greatest enemy. You are your greatest obstacle. So I got there and I did a whole speech about telling yourself to shut up. Teaching yourself to say, you know what, you are not going to stop you from beating you. That it was funny the way everything came about. I got a standing ovation, and the people were just really inspired because they realized that, you know, we blame so much on government, we blame so much on religion, we blame so much on enemies and this, that, and da, da, da. But most of the things that stop us from doing what we need to do is us, our inability to look past certain things in order to get our goal. You know, we have it, a lot of people, even in America, we have this idea that, you know, we can try to do it, we can hope to do things, and, you know, if I had this, if I had $1 million, I can get it. But then you look at all these people who've had nothing, Frederick Douglass, you know, W.E.B. Du Bois, people that didn't have everything but were able to do so many things, or even if you do have everything, even still, it's as hard as anybody to do something amazing. But if you get over yourself, you can. And that's what I spoke about on my first TED Talk. And it happened to be outside the country, so that was extra pressure because I felt like I was representing every Black American and anybody who wanted to do anything, because I said, my gosh, you know, I'm over here in a different country. I gotta have to do it. I have to do it right. I have to be inspirational. I have a dream speech in a different country or whatnot, and not get booed. And I did it.
God is good. God is good. And you said that you were representing the entire race over there, right? Or at least the African American segment of that race in Doha or in Jordan. I'm sorry. Now you've also been to South Africa, and what took you over there?
I did the World Conference on, I was a keynote speaker for the World Conference on AIDS. That was an amazing journey because I got to the motherland and I got a chance to see what the world was, man. That was actually my first time going to a different continent, and it was amazing because this was it. Like, this is where it started. I kissed the ground. I went to Soweto. You know, I went to the Hector Peterson Museum. You know, I got a chance to submerge myself in blackness and see these are the same people that said, oh, no, apartheid, boo-boo. You ain't, nah, this ain't going to go down. These were little kids who started the movement. Yeah, these were little kids, you know, Serafina, you know, Hector Peterson was the first kid to get shot. I mean, these are little kids. We over here grown people getting punked. These were little kids that said, no, we will not learn only Afrikaans. We need to learn everything so we won't have any limits. Nah, baby, we're going to beat this. These are little kids, and it inspired me to realize that, you know what? What I'm doing over in America, just like in the Bible it says there is nothing new under the sun, what I'm doing over in America is just the beginning. It's just a continuation of what we've been doing since day one. And it inspired me. Even like I had to overcome obstacles when I was there. Like I almost missed my flight. I had to pay for my hotel. Of course, I got reimbursed. All this types of stuff, whatever. Like it was just amazing to be over there and have to deal with adversity, but still overcome because of what the spirit that you have in you. You have that African endurance or whatever. You're just gonna, you know, no matter what it is. Like I don't care what you think it is. I know what it is, and it is just something I'm going to defeat. And, of course, you weren't able to do it because of that spirit. And being over there, I got a chance to be around other people who had that spirit. I got a chance to see why our women look the way they do, because the women in Africa, in Johannesburg, South Africa, they were off the chain. I tried to marry everybody, but I couldn't. I didn't have enough time, and I had a girlfriend at the time, so I couldn't go back on my word as a true man. I couldn't. But then we broke up later, like a year later. I was like, dang, why couldn't we break up when I was in Africa? You know what I'm saying? But if we were when I was in Africa, I wouldn't even be in America right now. I'd be over there with my boo-boo. But, yeah.
You're a funny guy, Devin. You're a funny guy. You know, I think I want to invite you to Ghana, you know, to perform maybe this year. I want to get you over there and get you in front of another different kind of crowd on the continent of Africa. Because we're such a diverse continent. I mean, South Africa is probably a beautiful place. I've never been there, but I heard it's gorgeous. And Ghana is also a beautiful place as well, but it's also different people altogether. So I definitely want to invite you there, you know, if you're willing, and maybe we can coordinate that. How can people kind of check you out? What do you have in store for this year? What kind of shows are you going
to? The best way to check me out is go to my website. It's very simple to remember. My last name is Robinson X. All you have to put is a .com on the end of it. So it's Robinson, the letter X, as in Xavier, .com. RobinsonX.com. You'll go there and you check my upcoming schedule. I mean, I'm all across the country from March until April or whatnot. I'm performing maybe about 8 to 10 times a month, which is a pretty good average. And from there, you can catch me anywhere. If you would like to book me to your school, your state, your country, or what have you, it's not an issue. All you have to do is make a phone call or send me an email. We work with everybody. We don't set price guides to anything or whatnot because we work. Our goal, and my agent is Ansel Pratt, my mentor, my childhood mentor as well. I always let him know, hey, let's not set any goals. Let's not set any stringent guidelines in regards to what people can, how much it'll cost, because I don't want to have anybody say they weren't able to get educated from me because they couldn't afford it. So we work with anybody's budget and whatnot. I've done things for all types of crazy money, a lot of money, a little money, doesn't matter, because I want to make sure that if I have a message, I can't let my message get out because of money, then I did the world an injustice, and I'm not here for that. So that's the best way to contact me. You can go to RobinsonX.com. You'll catch me there. You'll catch all the information, all the things that I'm doing, and it'll be a lot easier for you to go there because you get a chance to see even video of what I've done, so that way you even get more hyped of having me wherever you want me to be.
Certainly. Well, I thank you for joining us today, Devin Robinson X, a.k.a. Egypt. And keep spreading your message. Keep doing good things, brother. And we'll speak very soon. I hope you're up in D.C. soon so I can come and see one of your shows again.
Well, I appreciate it. I should be at D.C. from the 27th until the to the 1st of April from of March. I'll be there from the 27th of March to the 1st of April, roughly. So you have no other choice. If I don't see you for those, what, 4 or 5 days, then that's an issue you're going to have to handle, brother.
All right. Definitely will, man. Take care.
Be well.
Stand by, one time, mic check. Take a breath, don't whine, who's next? It's been a long, long time, my friend, since the last time the divine was rung like this. So move your body, jump, jump, move your body, what? It ain't a party till we rock your body, jump. So move your body, jump, what? Move your body. Got 6 billion ways you can send out the body like so. I'ma get your guns, but they rob you. Put a little something in your drink and it got you. Running like you've been downgraded. This is dedicated to all my natives like so.
Well, thank you for joining us for another episode on Each One, Reach One. We have the pleasure of sitting now with Devin Robinson X, a.k.a. Egypt. Check him out. He'll be in the city, I'm sure, soon. Check him out on his website. Till next week, we'll do it again.